All right, everybody, welcome into the Calling It podcast, recording Thursday, November 7th, just before the 1 o'clock hour. I'm Alex Barth. He is Alex Leibowitz. We are powered, as always, by CLNS Media. Leibowitz, what's going on?
Not much. Another week, you know, trying to get after it, enjoying my my late fall weather, so doing well. How about you?
What did you do to get after it today? What was your definition today of getting after
it? I worked out. I'm still sweaty. I haven't even showered yet. I'm disgusting.
What a trooper. What a trooper. What a company man right there. All right. Let's get into it. We got to start because we haven't done this in a long time. We have not done a Boston Celtics show in a long time. And I got to tell you, they, unlike last year, they deserve it right now. They've earned it. This team is, I don't know if you watched the game the other night. They're playing some close games against some bad teams in the Knicks, in the Cavs, but they're fun to watch. They are playing a great band of basketball. They're all into it. And they're winning. Ultimately, they're winning. They're 5-1. They're tied for the best record in the NBA. And if they finish 81-1 and win every game by 3 points, that's fine than winning half their games with blowouts and losing the other half. Like, I'll take it. This team has winning in its DNA, which is the exact opposite of the team last year. That team would try to figure out ways to lose games. This team is figuring out ways to win games, and it's so, so refreshing.
Yeah, it's kind of reminiscent of the Isaiah Thomas Celtics.
Yes.
They would go on a lot of fourth quarter runs, had a lot of clutch players, and you just had a team that you love to root for. And you said a massive contrast from last year. I think Kemba Walker's been a guy who's taken over the helm and been a fantastic leader, congratulating his teammates for taking the last shot. And then Gordon Hayward, obviously, is looking very healthy. But overall, you got to be excited with the start the Celtics are off to, and it seems like they might exceed expectations this season.
So I have a bit of a Gordon Hayward hot take on that. I think that, you know, you can go back and listen to the shows. I thought he was overrated in Utah. I thought he was overrated when they signed him. A lot of people are saying that Gordon Hayward is quote, back to where he was before the injury. I think he's beyond that. I think this is the best he's ever played. And it's only a few games, and I get that, but I didn't think we would see this guy outside of maybe once or twice a season when the Celtics signed him. And he's out here getting buckets like his wife told him if he scores 60, she'll give him a son.
Yeah, no, I agree. He went 17 for 20 from the field in that 39-point game, and all three of those misses were from beyond the arc. I mean, talk about efficiency. The guy is just – it seems like he's – come out to play, and he's kind of got something to prove, which he absolutely does. After last season, he did not heal from that injury, or he did not come back from that injury the way that really anybody wanted to, especially him. This is the year where he has to prove it. He has to show that he's worth that contract. And if he can be your best player or your second best player with Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown right behind him, and don't forget Marcus Smart, that's huge. And this is a team, people were talking about, you know, fifth or fourth spot, but again, they have the potential to be an exceptional unit. And I mean, that's even more true when you have Gordon Hayward playing like he is.
And I think the key to that, like, they don't have that superstar. And I still don't know that they're better than Milwaukee. I know they beat them, but Milwaukee's the kind of team that can take games off in the regular season. The Celtics can't. So that kind of game actually makes sense. We're a long way from the playoffs. But in terms of the regular season, yeah, I think the key with the Celtics is they don't have that superstar, but they have this is where, right, and I ragged on Brad Stevens a lot last year. I did. But and this kind of goes back to what I said last year. This is the two sides of Brad Stevens. If you can get everybody to buy in, his system can make good players great and great players superstars. When people don't buy in, he doesn't have the ability to bring that thing back from the brink. So it looks to me now like everybody's buying in. And therefore, you start seeing the benefits of his system that we didn't see last year. I think a lot of those coming in what Kemba Walker's doing. He has been an absolute killer in the fourth quarter. I think Jaylen Brown kind of reverting back. I love what Jaylen, and I know we really haven't seen him, but the very early looks we got at him, I love what he's done with his game. And I was not a big Jaylen Brown guy, but I'm starting to come around because he's not trying to be the best player on the floor. He's not trying to outskill everybody. He's a big dude, and he's playing like a big dude. He's putting his shoulder down, driving to the basket, and getting contact. That's what he's needed to do this whole time. So yeah. I think that, you know, you start seeing these people buy in more, and this is where Brad Stevens can really establish himself as one of those elite coaches. He's not great at getting people to buy in, but once they buy in, he can take teams to another level, and that's what we've seen here early in this season.
100%. I think everybody knows their role, and they all have that common goal, which is to try to win and, again, try to erase what happened last season. The leaders on this team seem to be, you know, good leaders. I like having Marcus Smart as the emotional guy who will come off the bench if need be. I like having, again, Kemba Walker mobbing Jason Tatum after he hits that game winner against the Knicks.
What did Tatum say? That's my guy. That's my guy.
Yeah. And I know that Tatum was also very close with Kyrie Irving, but I think you got to respect someone like Kemba Walker. Not to dwell too much on the Kyrie years that he had with the Celtics, but the contrast and just what you're seeing so far and the respect that's already garnered between these players and you mentioned it, buying into Brad Stevens and his system, it's huge. And they're also like not turning the ball over at all, which is fun to watch.
I think a lot of it is just Kemba, and sure, he's such a smart player. Although I will say, right, you know, this wouldn't be our show if we didn't critique something. Mm-hmm. There are still some things this team needs to figure out. We'll get to the big men in a second, but
yeah,
the backup point guard or third string point guard, depending on how you want to classify Marcus Smart, that's still a job to be won. And you have Brad Wanamaker, who really didn't play last year, and he now seems to have the role for the time being, but you got a couple rookies in Carson Edwards and Tremont Waters right behind him. And sorting that out is going to be interesting, because Kemba's played a lot of minutes here early, and you're going to need to get him not necessarily total rest nights. I don't know that they need to pull a Kawhi and give him maintenance nights, but maybe some nights where he only plays 20, 25 minutes. So I'm interested to see how this backup point guard situation works out. I personally love Carson Edwards. He was my favorite of all their draft picks. I had said I think he was going to be the best player of the entire, what was it, four-man draft class. Now, mm-hmm. Grant Williams has been outstanding, and he seems to be an everyman. They can play him wherever on the floor. It's kind of like Jared Sullinger without the weight or the back problems. But
Tremont Waters, the weight problems.
Well, yeah, the back was because of the weight. And I love Jared Sullinger. I really did. But I think Grant Williams is who they kind of wanted that to be. Tremont Waters and Carson Edwards are right there. And it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out, especially with a guy in Carson Edwards who in today's NBA, I mean, I'm not the first one to make this comparison. I made it back in April. I've seen a lot of people since. He's Eddie House. That is his potential, is to be Eddie House. And show me a Celtics fan who doesn't love Eddie House, and I'll show you somebody who's lying about being a Celtics fan.
But I think Carson Edwards, I don't think he's necessarily a point guard. I think he's an undersized shooting guard. I think he's someone who can spot up and take a three from anywhere.
I think it's pretty much automatic. If they can teach him to be a guy who can bring the ball up and distribute, that gets him more minutes, and then that's another way to get that shooter on the floor.
Sure, and I agree with that. But I don't think the necessity for like a set backup point guard is huge. I think you have guys like, you know, Marcus Smart even, or Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, or Gordon Hayward, who can bring the ball up if need be. I think size is the bigger issue. And in today's NBA, you're seeing that point guard position not be phased out, but you're seeing guys from every position.
There's more point forwards, right?
Point forwards. When you have, you know, 6'10", 6'11", guys bringing the ball up, you know the game has changed. So I think they'll get by without that. I think the bigger concern is size on this team, the health of Enes Kanter, and whether or not Taco Fall can eventually become an everyday player.
Yeah, so let's get into that, because that, I think, you know, and I've if there's one criticism I've had of the Celtics under Brad Stevens, Danny Ainge said, I don't think they care about rebounding at all. I think they disregard it. I don't think they think it's important, or I didn't. And then last season happened, and they just got brutalized on the boards last year, and it changed games. Even though they traded Aaron Baines, I think getting Taco Fall, I think drafting Grant Williams, who's undersized mm-hmm. but is a good rebounder,
yeah,
and Enes Kanter, who I think is not a great rebounder, but I think he is a bit underrated in that aspect. At least he's dominant on the offensive glass. Mm-hmm. He has a knack on the offensive glass, which is big. So they've obviously got to get him back, but I still think they're a big short. I think it's okay for now. It's the kind of thing where at the deadline, if you really think he can make a run at this, you go out, you get another big. And I'm fine with that strategy right now. I think that is the way to play it, because that having that extra roster spot has allowed them to keep some of these younger guys on this roster. But yeah, I want to see what Taco Fall can do. I understand they only have 45 days with him, and they have to plan that out and try to get that through the whole season. But you watched him against the Knicks, and they just had no idea what to do with him. They couldn't defend him. He would get to his spot on the block. They'd have won even two guys there, and it did not matter. And look, he's got to get in shape, right? Any guy who's 7'7", there's going to be knee problems. He's got to stay in shape. They've got to keep him healthy. He does have to, you know, get a little bit better in terms of technique. But if they can get him there, I'll go back to it from that next game. They did not know what to do with him. They could not defend him.
Yeah, and I don't understand why he hasn't been getting as many minutes. Again, the only game he's played in was that one, and he's had ample opportunity with the Nets Kanter being sidelined. So maybe they try to phase him in, and maybe they're looking at this as a delicate developmental process for a guy who's still pretty raw, which you're going to see out of any 7'6 big man, with the exception of maybe Yao Ming. So he needs to become a bigger part of it. The French kid, Vincent Poirier, maybe he can be someone who steps up, but I honestly just don't know what to make of him at this point.
I wasn't that impressed with him. I saw him a lot against the Knicks. I was not the second Knicks game.
Yeah.
I wasn't very impressed. I will see. And I think what it's going to come down to is, and I love Daniel Theis. I actually think he was a great find for them. I think he's a good player when he's on the floor, but he just can't stay healthy. Yeah. And he's dealing with an issue right now. It sounds like a short term, but he's going to miss a chunk of games this year. And when that happens, the question becomes who is going to step up. And, you could throw Kanter in that same boat too. Honestly, he has at times trouble staying on the floor. It's not necessarily long-term things, but kind of like he's doing right now, he'll miss a game or two here or there. So there's going to be nights later in the year where the games are a little more competitive. They didn't have to worry about it as much against the Knicks or against the Cavs, but there's going to be games later in the year where both those guys are going to be out, Tyson, Kanter, and they're going to need somebody, whether it's Poirier, whether it's Fall, whether it's somebody they trade for, to step up and play actual minutes. And I want to see these guys ready before that happens. I guess it doesn't mean much. If they're ready to go in that moment, they're ready to go. I'll be honest, I'm being a little selfish. I just want to watch Taco Fall. He's so much fun to watch. Like that's a part of this take. I have to acknowledge that. But am I wrong?
No,
am I wrong in wanting to watch this guy?
No, it's fun. I mean, you don't see it. You never see a guy that big, you know, playing the NBA. And usually it's because they're too big to control, to you know, gain any athletic ability. So it would be awesome to see him. And I think the one, you know, sign that everyone wants to see him in is the fact that they were chanting for him at MSG when they played the Knicks.
I think people need to stop on that because I think it makes him uncomfortable. And, you know, you don't want to put any extra pressure on him.
I guess, but you're in the NBA. You got to deal with that. And I think he understands, you know, the fanaticism around him, given how big he is. You see that jacket he got? He's given free stuff because he's so big. And it's just, again, it's something you don't see a lot. But just to go back to that, I think the two guys that will be stepping up and will be huge, not centers, even undersized for power forwards, but again, Grant Williams and Semi Ojeleye. Two big physical guys who play beyond their size, and they're going to need to be relied on. And you've already seen Brad Stevens rely on both of them a decent amount this season. I think that's only going to continue to grow.
All right. Well, Ed, you know what? Fascinating stretch of the schedule coming up here too. They got the Hornets, you know, at the time we're recording this tonight, it's Kemba's return to Charlotte and, you know, my favorite NBA player of all time, Terry Rozier. You listened to the shows last year, you know, that sarcasm, but, then they're on the road against Spurs. Then they got the Mavericks, and that should be a good game in Boston. You get Doncic and Porzingis. And then you're looking towards the end of the month. They got a West Coast road trip coming up. The Warriors, who suck, but it's going to be fun to watch them blow out the Warriors. Then they got the Kings. The Suns are up and coming. And then the Clippers and the Nuggets, the two best teams in the West, to more or less close out in November. They got a couple home games at the end there against the Nets. Not that Kyrie will play in those. But they're at the very least, and look, the Celtics are still kind of a scrappy underdog team. This could all fall apart any second, but they're giving us entertaining basketball to watch. And that, and then the Bruins being on their win streak, which we'll have to get to on another show because they absolutely deserve it as well. David Pasternak is out of his mind. But, you know, after Celtics last year and then what happened with the Red Sox, Boston starting to feel like Boston again. We were losing a little bit too much there. Got a little uncomfortable for me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, right now, as we record this, the Patriots first in the AFC, the Celtics first in the Eastern Conference, Bruins first in the Eastern Conference.
Oh, wait, are you serious? I didn't even notice that.
Oh, yeah. All in first place.
You got to throw that gem on Twitter.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I think I saw it on Twitter. I forget from who, but yeah, things are back on the up and up, and even after a Patriots loss to the Ravens.
Yeah, I mean, we could have gotten into that for sure.
Yeah, but
I'm not too worried about that game. I'm really not. Yeah, you know, great scheme, all of that. All right, let's get on to final thoughts though. I do have a football final thoughts. So that's actually a good transition. So I'll go first. Alabama, LSU, Saturday. 1-2 in the nation. You have, you know, two of the most historical college football programs of all time. And each side is saying this is one of the best teams their respective program has ever had. On top of that, the two quarterbacks in the game, I think, will be the first two picks in the NFL draft in April in Joe Burrow and Tua. I could not be more excited for Saturday. We got a nice little appetizer too with Penn State, Minnesota. And I'm not going to talk about that game because as much as I've tried to, I haven't been able to watch Minnesota this year. I know they're undefeated. I don't know much about them, but I know you're not a college football person, Lebowitz. And I know all the casual college fans are starting to switch to basketball, but to you and the rest of the, I don't watch college football crowd, 3:30 Saturday, ass on the couch, watch that game. It is going to be a generational football game like it was back in 2011 when Alabama and LSU played as 1-2. Fun fact, that was a week after I got my acceptance letter to the University of Alabama. So I was locked into that game. But
then you went to the opposite place.
The most opposite place, yes. look, both are very good football teams, not total opposites.
Yes, although one of them has a loss in that record.
We'll get into this football team next week a little bit.
Yeah.
But
so let me ask you this. The spread is Bama -6.5. Are you taking LSU to beat that?
That's tough. Because these games, again, like when they met last time, everybody thought, oh, they know each other so well. It's going to be a close game, whatever. It's going to be a high scoring game. The defenses won't be able to capitalize. And then it was a 9-6 game. So yeah. I would, you really got me on the spot here.
But think about it. Because I think it is tough. Because again, with games like these, it goes to overtime.
Right.
You have someone kick a, you know, get a touchdown and an extra point.
I think Alabama, you know what? I don't even know if I think Alabama's going to win this game. I'm trying not to be biased here. And
yeah,
Tua is coming off the ankle injury.
It's a home game too.
It's a home game for Alabama. But
yeah,
Tua's coming off the ankle injury. Alabama's defense hasn't been quite as advertised. And I think Joe Burrow is the best quarterback in the nation. I really do. And LSU's defense hasn't been what it usually is either. But yeah, I'm probably taking LSU. If it's Alabama -6.5, I think I'm taking LSU. I'll tell you this, though. I'm taking, and I know I just pumped up the offenses, but I'm taking the under.
Okay.
Always, SEC games. It's always low scoring when you get these SEC games like
and
this.
And the over-under is 63, so that would be.
Absolutely taking
so the hammer under. The under. All right. I might listen to you.
I would take the under on Penn State. Minnesota too. I know I said I don't know much about them, but I don't know these high ranked matchups in college football, unless it's the Pac-12 mm-hmm. or the Big 12, always end up low scoring. Big 10, SEC, ACC, it's always no points on the board because these teams get super tentative, and because of the way the rankings work, they play to not lose instead of to win, and then somebody makes one play late in the game. So look, betting aside, and if you're going to place bets on this game, betonline.ag, use the promo code CLNS50 for a 50% welcome bonus.
There you go.
It's going to be football at its absolute best. I'm very excited.
And with a Pats bye week, nothing better to do. You know?
It times out absolutely perfectly. I got people coming into town. I found this recipe. So, okay, this is a random story, but I'll tell it because I think it's very odd brand for me for this podcast.
Please.
I started following this Instagram account called Steak Lovers. And it's basically just videos of people making meat, whether it's steaks or stuff with ground beef, hamburgers, whatever. And it got me really craving it the other week. And I had a Saturday off and I was just like, whatever, I'm going to make chili. I want to make chili. I went online. I found this great recipe for beer and barbecue sauce chili. And it's incredible. And I'm making it on Saturday for the game.
Don't spill it like Kevin Malone. That's all I'll say.
No, I'm very careful with it. I do a very similar looking pot. I got like the big silver pot from Star Market, but I wouldn't spill a drop of this. I wouldn't dare. It's that good.
You save some for me, man.
I will.
All right. My final thought, JD Martinez opting in to his contract, although he can opt out next year as well. So the minimum is one season he's opting into. I think it's, what, $21 million salary. So this has a lot of people saying that the ratings on the wall and that Mookie Betts will be dealt. I don't know. I'm not sure. I think you got a guy in Chaim Bloom who's the new chief of baseball operations. I think that's his official title. Yep. Coming from a team in which they work with a small budget and they've drafted very well. So you have a guy who's evaluated a lot of prospects in this league and probably knows where to go, who to pursue if they're going to try to get a good return for Mookie Betts. But I like it. I think JD Martinez is a great player, even though I don't know if he'll be on this team in another 2 years or the next time that they win a World Series. He's a fan favorite, and I don't think $21 million breaks the bank. Mookie is, but you're talking about a 10 to 12 year commitment at $35 million plus. And I don't know.
To steal a line from Steve Peralt from Section 10, this is the greatest homegrown talent the Red Sox have had maybe since Carl Yastrzemski.
I would love for them to re-sign a Mookie Betts.
Well, so
logistically, can it work though? That's the problem.
Well, what do you think about the camp that, okay, JD's opted in, now you trade him and use that money to keep moving?
That would be the preferable move, 100%.
Yeah, I'm in on that. I'm in on that one.
But I don't know how that would work, and the return you'd get for him, I don't know, if it would be anything of substance.
But you don't need – if you trade Mookie, you need multiple top-level prospects back.
Yes.
If you trade JD Martinez, I don't know that – you don't need as much if you trade JD Martinez and you keep Mookie. Do you get what I'm saying there? Like – honestly, in a perfect world, go find another contender that has the pitching but no bats. And I would even do I guess you got to make sure you drop the money, but just go get an arm. Just go get an arm, help fill out this rotation so you don't have to spend on one in free agency. Go get somebody who's on arbitration. You don't need like a hall of prospects for JD Martinez. Get an MLB-ready arm, middle of the rotation, MLB-ready arm, and then one or two high to mid-level prospects. I think that's all you need for JD Martinez.
Yeah, I think the Mets would be a good bargainer for that sort of thing. I think they have plenty of pitching, and they're a team that's in win-now mode and could probably afford to do that trade-off, which is, I think, where they've wanted Mookie Betts, or at least I know a lot of fans have been rallying for them to pursue Mookie Betts. I don't know, though. The real story this offseason is obviously with Mookie, and this kind of adds something to it, but I don't know the logistics of his contract. I don't know if trading him is something that
JD?
Because if he figured that was going to happen, if that was a likely possibility, and I guarantee his agents would let him know or have consulted with the Red Sox to some degree, don't you think he would just have pursued free agency? And I know last time around he didn't get signed till spring training, so it did not go well for him. This gives him more security, but he could have gotten a longer deal, maybe less annually, but he could have gotten a 4 or 5 year deal for around $20 million a year, I think, if he pursued free agency right now. Instead, he opted in, and I think that's because he assumes, the Red Sox aren't going to deal.
Look, I'm fine if Chaim Bloom comes out and is just vicious like that, though. I would be cool with that. I mean, the two guys I'd look to trade if I'm him are JD, and I think you can look to shop David Price as well. I look at a team like the New York Rangers.
New York Rangers?
Wow. Texas Rangers. Yeah, go trade him for Lundqvist. I look at a team like the Texas Rangers, and I think Jackie's a guy you can definitely move, or. However, get his salary off the books. You get Price off the books. You go get a guy like Delino DeShields, who's on arbitration. The Rangers have a deep farm system. You get a couple prospects for Price. And, I mean, it's going to kind of contradict what I'm going to say now, but I just don't know how much Price has in the tank. At the end of the day, you need to do something to bring in cheap pitching. And that means young pitching, because you need guys who are ready. Because you look at the rotation. I don't know what you're getting out of Price. Is Chris Sale still a starting pitcher, or do you need to put him in the bullpen? Because I think that's ultimately the plan when they signed him to that 5-year deal, is at the end of that, he'd end up being the closer, and they still don't have a closer.
But you have to throw all of that out of the window. And this is, again, this adds just another element. None of these guys are Chaim Bloom guys.
Right.
These are all Dombrowski or Cherington guys, right? So mostly
more reason
Dombrowski.
I think, you have these assets that are valuable assets, but you're not necessarily attached to if you're Bloom.
Yeah.
So again, I just, they need to focus on the rotation, because Price is a question mark injury-wise, and I think he's more valuable as a trade asset than having him in the rotation. Chris Sale, can you put him in the rotation? Does he need to be in the bullpen? Mm-hmm. Is Nathan Eovaldi still a starter? Does he need to be in the bullpen? Brian Johnson, you can ask the same about him. And then Eduardo Rodriguez is still a starter, and he just had a great year. But how, you know, can you rely on him to pitch more than 20 games? He stayed relatively healthy last year. That was new. So they go in with the rotation full of question marks. I don't even want to say full of question marks. The rotation isn't full right now. So that, to me, is where the question lies. And I think how you fill that out affordably is trading guys like J.D. Martinez and trading guys like David Price.
So I also wonder, and I brought this up a few weeks ago or a few episodes ago. You have a guy, Chaim Bloom comes from a team in which they use pitchers unlike any other team in the MLB. Will Alex Cora be willing to experiment with that sort of thing, especially when you have Chris Sale and Nathan Eovaldi, whose durability has been in question over the past few years? Maybe they don't have to go out and start and pitch seven innings every single time they take the mound. Maybe they can come in from the third inning to the sixth inning and try to just take care of that second half, second third of that game. Maybe they try to do something differently because Porcello's out the door. He's gone. Eduardo Rodriguez, is he going to have another year like he did this past year? We don't know. David Price will probably be reliable. He's been your most reliable guy, ironically, over the past few years. And then, again, those two guys, Eovaldi and Sale, have not been reliable from a health standpoint. So you don't have the money to really go out and get these extra pieces. Maybe you change out the way that you've been doing it, and maybe you follow that Tampa Bay Rays model of using your pitchers in a completely different way. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility, and I don't think it's that bad of an idea.
Yeah, see, it gets under my skin when they run the Red Sox like a small market team. It does. So, and maybe that's the best plan, but it just, I hate hearing that.
But can't this be the bridge point for the Red Sox to get from where they are now to becoming a championship caliber team another year or two? Because I don't think they are next season, given the salary constraints they have.
Yeah. Maybe this is me being a spoiled Boston fan. I don't know. I feel like they should be in contention every year. I do.
They should. Dombrowski kind of screwed them a little bit.
He did. And yeah, I guess ultimately I got to remember that like they are digging themselves up out of a hole. They're not starting at zero. They're starting in the negative because Dombrowski was an absolute mess. So. Let's go from that. All right. That'll do it for us on this episode. Everybody enjoy Celtics tonight. Enjoy the college football games on Saturday. We'll be back with a show next week. In the meantime, you can find all of our stuff on Twitter at Calling It Podcast. Check us out online at clnsmedia.com under the podcast tab. For Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you on the next one.